Chip Cookies. Located on the main concourse of the sub, Blue Chip features yummy baked goods and cookies made in-house. Blue Chip opens at 7 a.m. to serve all your early morning latte needs and is proudly served certified fair trade organic coffee since 2004. This business is owned and operated by the AMS, your student society. Hey, as long as I'm your bed,
and we're back, just wrapping up the show here with Big Troubles. We are going to play one more track off their new album, and then we have Lucas' request of Eric's Trip. So we're going to play one more Big Troubles song and one Eric's Trip song. Did you want to say anything about Eric's Trip?
They're my favorite band.
Thanks.
That's about it.
All right. So, Big Troubles followed by Eric's Trip. Well, I'll say a little something about Eric's Trip and Bruce Coburn, and why they chose that song is because they're from the States. So before the show, I was telling them about a little thing called CanCon. So I was telling them if they're going to DJ on Canadian radio, they have to choose some Canadian songs. So their Canadian songs they chose were Bruce Coburn and Eric's Trip. So here you go, one last track with my guests here in studio today, Big Troubles.
Thank you.
This is CITR 101.9 FM, and that was Melanie. We have a special show today. We're going to put a lot of soundtracks from movies and have a couple of interviews with film directors. So stick around, you're listening to the Morning After Show 101.9 FM. Here you're listening to 101.9 FM, and like I said, we have special guests today, and the first one is Saul Landau, or Landau.
Landau.
He just got to Vancouver. He's at the airport. Hi, Saul. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Fine, fine. Thank you. And he has a film presenting in the Vancouver International Film Festival called "Will the Real Terrorist Please Stand Up?" He just came from. Where do you live, Saul?
I'm still in San Francisco. Actually, I'm going to get on the plane to Vancouver in about 30 minutes.
Ah, okay, cool. Yeah, so welcome to Vancouver when you come here. The film talks a little bit about the strained relationships between Cuba and the USA. I don't know if you want to give a little bit more of the synopsis of the film or. What is it about? What can people expect?
Well, it's almost 52 years now since the United States and Cuba have been having bad relations. And the United States, how do I put it? I think the best way to put it is that...
Oops. I think we lost him right there. So let's put another song in the meantime so we can reestablish contact.
Me den lo que me quitan, no dan huevos de oro, todas las gallinitas. Si la vida no me sonríe, la hago cosquillita. Poco aguantan, no están preparados, lo entienden. Cuando ya ha pasado, te vas harta de lo que has deseado. Te come pescado, pero nunca ve los buenos resultados. Todavía no estáis quemados, yo me estoy tiñendo toda la ropa de dorado. Amor, entre morado y morado. Disculpado, todo llega, ya no quiere más así apaleado. Saben que tengo el cañón guardado y las estrellas y la luna de mi lado. Si te han pegado, vete y disfruta del olor de mi estofado. Soy la cocinera de tu mejor.
Okay, so we're back here. We lost contact briefly there with Saul. So you were telling us about the strained relationships with Cuba and USA?
Yes, for 50-plus years now, it's been a history of violence perpetrated really by the United States or people living in the United States, sometimes by the CIA and sometimes by Cuban exiles who get winked at, if you like, by the American authorities because... Despite the fact that the United States has declared a war against terror, the terrorists are walking quite calmly and safely down the streets of Miami and living quite well there. And so this is a film that shows who they are. They talk directly to camera and tell who about their deeds, and some of them boast about them with pride. Others have some, how shall we say it, second thoughts or reflections. Mm-hmm. And we also speak to U.S. officials and Cuban officials. Cuban counter-terrorists, Cuban spies, and so on. They're all in the film. So I think it might be exciting for people to see it.
Yeah. I watched the film, and it's really, really interesting what you were saying, especially because people like, I don't remember the guy with this, the name of this guy. He was Orlando, no? Orlando
Posadas Carrillo. Orlando Bosch.
Rolando Bosch and Posada Carriles, it's a proof fact that they blew a plane and then they did all these attacks against the tourism resorts.
Yeah.
So why do you think there's that great degree of impunity?
Well, you know, in the film, one of the terrorists, Jose Basulto, says it. He says, Miami is the only city in the United States with its own foreign policy. And I think that's an accurate description. When we have a congresswoman from Miami, a very important one, she's the chair of the House Foreign Affairs Committee right now,
uh-huh.
And she, on camera, calls for the assassination of Fidel Castro. And nobody does anything. Nobody says anything. And she continues to rise in her power. And so it's a very strange duality that we have. You know, it's like, there are bad terrorists, and of course all of those are Muslims.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are good terrorists, and those are freedom fighters.
Uh-huh.
They're fighting for the freedom of Cuba. But how are they fighting? By knocking down commercial airliners with 73 people on board or bombing hotels. These are the presumed methods for freedom fighting. And the United States government simply does not move to do anything about them. You know, when George Bush was president, he said very straightforwardly, that anyone who harbors a terrorist is as guilty as the terrorist.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in those days we could excuse Bush because people thought maybe he didn't know what the word harbors meant. But how can you do it with Obama? I mean, after all, he's a law professor. He used to be a law professor. Indeed, he was a constitutional law professor.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he's forgotten the basic document that he used to teach.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Cool. And how was it easy for you to gain access to these extreme right Cubans? And
no, not really. But you know, old filmmakers have tricks. What can I say? And we, I think, treat them fairly. We don't distort what they say. We don't make any comments on what they say.
Mm-hmm.
We let them speak for themselves, and let the audience make the judgment.
Okay. Yeah, the film is going to be screened tomorrow, Wednesday, October 5th at 6:40 at Granville. On Friday, there's another screening at 3 p.m. They're also on Granville. And next Tuesday, October 11, at Pacific Cinematheque at 1:30 p.m. So there's three chances of watching this documentary, which also touches on the Cuban Five. You want to talk a little bit about the Cuban Five, so people know what?
Yeah, sure. The Cuban Five were five Cuban agents, and they were sent into the United States undercover, with false identities. To penetrate the violent exile groups that were perpetrating bombings inside of Cuba, and especially against Cuban tourist facilities, hotels and restaurants and bars, clubs. And in one of those, an Italian tourist was actually killed. I still don't understand why the Italian Attorney General hasn't filed extradition papers against Luis Posada Carriles, who admitted to the New York Times that he was behind these bombings. Anyway, the Cuban Five were essentially anti-terrorist activists, and they were recycling what they found to the FBI in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, the FBI arrested them, their own sources, if you like, and they were tried in Miami, where a Cuban agent has as much chance of getting a fair trial as a Jew would have had in Berlin in 1938.
Yeah.
And they were given very, very long sentences. One of them is going to be released on parole in 3 days, René González.
Uh-huh.
And but instead of letting him just go back to Cuba, the judge is insisting that he serve 3 years under supervision in Miami, which is like putting a bullseye on his chest.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the chances of his getting assassinated are very great.
Yeah.
So people might, you know, want to think about that, talk about it, and maybe even try to do something about it. The rest of them are still in prison. I've visited one, Gerardo Hernandez, mm-hmm. several times, including 3 times with the American actor Danny Glover.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in a maximum security federal penitentiary in the Mojave Desert in California, in a place called Victorville. So the Cuban Five should be a cause that's known by people. People ought to get, if you like, oriented about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anti-terrorists who are in prison, the terrorists walk on the streets.
Yeah.
It might be a little ironic, but there it is. And I hope the Canadian public gets well aware of what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, there's a movement here. I think it's commanded by anti-war organization, and they have a movement to free the Cuban Five here in Vancouver too.
Good.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about the music of the film.
Yes. Well, a lot of the music was done by my son and my grandson,
uh-huh.
Greg Landau, my son, and Camilo Landau, my grandson.
Mm-hmm.
There's a scene where one of the terrorists arrives at the airport in Havana, and he goes through customs and immigration and goes into a taxi and into the hotel and begins to make his bomb. And that was written by my grandson, Camilo.
Uh-huh.
He also played all the instruments. And my son, Greg, who's just gotten his 5th Grammy nomination,
okay.
He supervised the music, did all the sound design, composed some of it, arranged some of it. And the final song, whose lyrics I think are very clever, was done by the Cuban Cowboys.
Mm-hmm. Are they, I guess they live also there in Miami, the Cuban Cowboys?
No, they live in San Francisco.
Oh, San Francisco. Okay.
So, I think the music, it's all original composition. And hopefully people will enjoy it.
Cool. Yeah, it's an interesting film. You should check it out. Will the real terrorist please stand up? From Saul. And so let me repeat the dates. Wednesday, October 5th, that's tomorrow at 6:40 at Granville Theater. Friday at 3 p.m. at Granville also. And on Tuesday at Pacific Cinematheque, next Tuesday at 1:30 p.m. Well, have a safe flight, Saul, and we'll see you here in Vancouver. Thanks for the interview.
Well, thank you. And bye-bye.
Yeah, ciao. So, yeah, a lot of cool films during the festival. So let's put some music and some stuff here. Putting a couple of soundtracks. Let's see if you can identify this one.
Change. Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the chart?
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
Tuesday, October 4th at the Biltmore, it's San Francisco indie poppers, Girls, touring in support of their latest CD, Father, Son, Holy Ghost. Advance tickets are available at Red Cat, Scratch, High Life, and Victoria's Ditch Records, as well as online at ticketweb.ca. Sunny and the Sunsets and Papa will open up the show. Doors are at 8 p.m. Girls, October 4th at the Biltmore Cabaret.
So we're back here on 101.9 FM. Today we have a special film show, kind of, because the Vancouver International Film Festival is happening right now around town. So you should check it out. So we had that interview with Saul Landau. We started the show with Coast One, El Timbre No Funciona, and Mala Rodriguez with La Cocinera. It's from a film called La Auberge Espagnole, and by Cedric Caplish. Yeah, pretty cool film. And also after that, we listen to Kevin Shields with City Girl. That's from the film Lost in Translation by Sofia Coppola, pretty famous film, I think. And yeah, they're in Tokyo. And talking about Tokyo, there's these bands coming on October 18 at the Biltmore Cabaret. But we'll talk a little bit more about that later on the show, because we have Pamela Yates and Paco de Onis here. They came all the way from
New York.
Eh? Cool. They're bringing the film Granito, or How to Nail a Dictator, which talks about the Guatemala intervention, I guess, no? And so, Pamela, why don't you tell us a little bit about the film, the history of the film, because it's...
Sure. The film Granito is actually a sequel to one of the first films I made in 1982 called When the Mountains Tremble. And When the Mountains Tremble and all the filmic outtakes from that film, in other words, the material that we didn't use in the film, is now being used as forensic evidence in a genocide case, because two of the generals in my original film are two of the defendants in the genocide case. So the lawyers in that case asked me to go and look for additional evidence that would implicate the generals in the case. But, you know, when you make a documentary film, what you remember is what you put into the film, not what you took out of the film.
Okay, yeah.
And so it was like doing an archaeological dig through 25-year-old material,
mm-hmm.
and rediscovering, actually, things I had filmed and stories that I had shot and things that people said to me whose importance I didn't really understand at the time. I mean, I'm not a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And when people are in power, like military dictators, you never think that they're actually going to be out of power one day, and that documentation and filmic documentation can be powerful evidence to be mm-hmm. used against them.
Yeah.
So Granito, How to Nail a Dictator is really about this case, but it's also a contemplation on the art of documentary filmmaking. I tried to take all the experiences of my 30 years of being a documentary filmmaker as I told this story to share it with the next generation of filmmakers to say, you know, what you do can make a difference.
Exactly.
What you do is making a difference.
What you do now, you can be useful in the future, no?
Exactly.
Yeah. Because I think it's very important to people to know that your footage from that time it's one of the only footages that exists that really documents the problem in the war in Guatemala at that time. Because you go to the guerrillas, you you were with them, then you moved to the high military ranks as well. So you want to talk to us a little bit about process, because you were very young. So how did you get into the jungles and all that?
Well, you know, I had been working as a sound recordist on other people's films in Nicaragua and El Salvador. So mm-hmm. I was already in Central America and I was pretty familiar. But Guatemala was a particularly difficult access problem because the Guatemalan journalists who were courageously trying to cover the story were being killed. And international journalists who tried to arrive were being deported. So I saw my chance when the generals declared a presidential election in which they were going to run. Kind of a facade to show the world that they were a free and democratic society and to attract additional foreign investment mm-hmm. and military aid for the counterinsurgency campaign. So I slipped in unnoticed because they had to allow in the foreign press corps. But at first, no one would talk to me. I felt like we were going to be total failures at this.
Uh-huh.
And it just took a really long time and a lot of persistence, some luck, to be able to talk to all sides in the conflict, really. I wanted to show it across the political spectrum. But then I had a whole film and nothing really to hold the film together because I was a beginning filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I met Rigoberta Menchú. She was a 22-year-old Guatemalan living in exile in the United States, and someone brought her to our office. And she became the dramatic thread in When the Mountains Tremble to tell the story.
Mm-hmm.
And amazingly enough, as destiny would have it, she also became the plaintiff in the genocide case in 1999. 10 years after we made When the Mountains Tremble, she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize.
Mm-hmm.
And based on her stature as a Nobel laureate, she became the plaintiff in the case to get the generals who had committed the genocide brought to justice.
Yep.
And there are many, many other examples of destiny in Granito. It's kind of a cross between, you know, a documentary and a crime thriller
uh-huh.
and a magical realist interpretation of what happened over 30 years.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. Well, let's put a Guatemalan song for all our Guatemalan friends, and we have many here in Vancouver. And we'll be back and talk more about what's happening with these people, no? And screening times and stuff like that. So you're listening to 101.9 FM. It's the morning after show, and this band is called Bohemia Suburbana.
Sin pensar, mirando a la gente al caminar, porque te asusta recordar. ¿Qué puedo hacer si lo que Dios me apaga, el diablo me lo enciende? ¿Qué puedo hacer?
Lo que Dios me apaga, lo que Dios me apaga, lo que Dios me apaga, lo que
So that's Paco and Gabriela. Rodrigo and Gabriela, sorry. We're here with Paco Onis, Paco de Oni. this is live in France, Rodrigo and Gabriela. And before them, Bohemia Suburbana with El Diablo, that Paco wanted to dedicate to Rios Montt, no?
Yes. This one goes out to you, Efrain.
Efrain. So Paco is a producer, and it's also here in the studio. How were you involved in When the Mountains Tremble? Or
no, I wasn't. That was before I met Pam. But
how did you get involved with this project?
I married Pam. Oh. No, but that's true that I did marry Pamela. But we've been making films together now for about over a decade, and so I used to be a music producer.
Okay.
And then I became a film producer, documentary film producer.
Okay.
Through meeting Pamela.
Okay.
So that's been a really rich experience. And when I was around, when the lawyers first asked to see the footage from When the Mountains Tremble, the outtakes of that film, and the whole process of starting to make Granito, which really began back in 2003, so it took almost a decade to get this film done.
Uh-huh.
And it's been an amazing experience. And then, of course, along the road, we met the other granitos, you know, the grains of sand, each person contributing towards the ultimate purpose of getting these genocidal dictators behind bars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's interesting. What's the difference between music producing and documentary producing?
Well, on one level, it's very similar. You know, production elements of producing, but in cinema, of course, you're not recording in a studio. You are out in the field. In documentary cinema, you know, uh-huh. You're out in the field. You're often in places that can be really dicey, dangerous, and you don't really always know what you're going to get. So that's really one of the rich parts of producing a documentary. And you know, bringing these stories out to a broad audience, which is really our ultimate goal.
Okay. Yeah. So, how did the people contacted you to research your footage to use it as an evidence against the case in this
against Rios Montt, former general Rios Montt and former general Benedicto Lucas Garcia.
Uh huh. How did they find you? Just because of the film, they look for you?
I was doing the first public screening of When the Mountains Tremble in Guatemala in 2003. Okay, 20 years after it had been made is the first time we could actually show it publicly there.
Okay.
And when we went, we found out from all the people who had gathered, the theater was sold out, standing room only, that the film had actually been shown thousands of times clandestinely during the armed struggle, and that it had become part of the collective conscience of Guatemala. And in the audience that night was one of the members of the international law team trying the genocide case. And she saw the film, and then it occurred to her that even though we had just a few minutes with some of the people involved in the case, who were defendants in the case, that we might have a lot of rich material. And it was astounding what we found. And you have to come see the film
to find out, to see it,
because uh-huh. I can't reveal it. Uh-huh. Yeah, it's playing tomorrow, October 5th. At 3:20 p.m. at the Granville Theater, and next Thursday, October 13th, at 10:45 a.m. So, you know, play hooky, don't go to school, go to see Granito, How to Nail a Dictator.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll be learning how to put a dictator behind bars.
Yeah, tomorrow at 3:20, they are going to be there, so it's cool that you get to meet the directors of the film. The court is in Spain, no, in Madrid, I guess.
Right.
What power does this international court has?
I guess you'd say it doesn't have the power to send somebody in to arrest General Rios Montt in Guatemala, but it does have the power to issue an international arrest warrant, which countries actually, you know, some countries wouldn't respect it, but I think most would. So Rios Montt effectively can't travel outside Guatemala without great risk of being arrested. And so he hasn't left Guatemala. And also there's a power of stigma that when an international court says that you are a war criminal, that you committed genocide, that you're wanted on those charges, you know, suddenly you go from being a respected statesman to a stigmatized, you know, international criminal.
Yeah. Cool. It's a great
struggle.
And also,
you know, the evidence that was uncovered in the Spanish National Court case is now being used in domestic cases in Guatemala. In other words, the evidence has really emboldened judges and prosecutors in Guatemala to say, you know what? There's evidence here. And we should be doing these trials here. They committed the crimes in Guatemala against the Guatemalan people, and we're Guatemalan, so let's try them here. And so now, actually, many people have been arrested. In fact, more people arrested or convicted in the last 3 months for crimes committed during the war than in the previous 30 years. So I think we're seeing a tipping point, and mm-hmm. I hope that Granito, the film, can be part of or contribute to this tipping point.
Via Granito of all the process.
Via Granito de Arena.
Yeah, that's very, very interesting. So the film, tomorrow at 3:20.
At the Granville?
At the Granville Theater. And you also interview some of the indigenous people that were fighting at that time. And now, 20, 30 years later, how did you find them?
Well, I looked really hard. Guatemala is not that big a country. And having made When the Mountains Tremble, it's like having an all-access backstage pass to a rock concert. It was pretty easy to meet people that I wanted to meet or to find people that somehow I thought was involved in this story. So I just, you know, spent a long time looking, and I had several years to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in documentary filmmaking, the people that you choose to tell the story are really, really important. It's like casting in a feature film. And in documentary filmmaking, we cast also. I think one of the most important people we found, though, was a person from the next generation, a 26-year-old lawyer who had become a lawyer because her father was disappeared, and she said, I'm going to become a lawyer, and I'm going to avenge the disappearance of my father. Her name is Alejandra Garcia.
Mm-hmm.
And she has an incredibly visionary approach to how to strengthen rule of law in Guatemala. And she's very credible. And, you know, I like to talk about Granito. It's kind of a feel-good human rights film.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody even told me the other day that they took their date there. So I guess now it's a date film, too, for human rights defenders.
People
who care about human rights.
No, it's also because...
A life-affirming film about genocide.
Yeah, no, but it's your story is very interesting, too. Like, your personal story on how do you... was there in the jungle at that time, and the process that you've been going through all these years, like researching your own material, and you know, it's all of that in the film. So it's a very personal film, I guess, too, no?
It is, and I've never made a personal film before, and I'll probably never make one again. So now is your chance.
I guess the other question is the comparison between Pinochet and Fray Rios Montt. You know, the Chilean dictator that at the end...
Yeah.
He was trialed and convicted.
Well, they share some things. They're both generals. They're both indicted by the Audiencia Nacional Court in Spain, the Spanish court. And neither one of them, as so far, has actually been convicted. But Rios Montt stands a chance. I think that the chain of command is getting closer and closer to him in terms of justice. His number two guy, or number three guy, was arrested recently in Guatemala, who was a general as well,
mm-hmm.
Charged with genocide, and he's in prison right now.
Okay.
And so that's getting quite close to him. But go ahead, Pam.
I was just going to say, there's also this thing called the Pinochet effect, which is what I was talking about before. So uh-huh. International courts institute proceedings against someone, and then it travels to the country of origin. Because remember, Pinochet, the people in Chile felt that they couldn't try Pinochet until the Spanish National Court asked for his extradition and sent an arrest warrant out. He wasn't extradited to Spain, but he did go back to Chile, where the Chileans opened up cases against him for human rights violations and corruption. Unfortunately, he died before he went to trial. But justice isn't always meted out just by trials. It's also meted out by charges against you and evidence accrued against you, and how people remember you.
How you go down in history. Yeah.
How you go down in history.
That's cool. Yeah. We'll talk a little bit more about that. The memory, no? It's very important. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And you're listening to 101.9 FM. We're having a special program today dedicated to film because the International Film Festival is happening all around town. I have to recommend the audience to some films too, so we'll do that after this. This is 101.9 FM.
Thursday, October 13th, Sealed with a Kiss presents Siskiyou, Christopher Smith, and The Beck and Call live at the Waldorf Cabaret. Make sure you don't miss the last Canadian show Siskiyou plays for the rest of the year. Not to mention, it's their record release party. Doors are at 8 p.m., tickets are $10 in advance, and can be found at Red Cat Records, Zulu Records, and on the Ticketmaster website. Sponsored by CITR 101.9 FM.
At Distributel, all high-speed internet services include unlimited downloads, so you'll never have to worry about caps or contracts again. With Distributel, you'll pay the same low price every month no matter how much you download. Plus, for a limited time only, enjoy free installation on all internet services. For more information, call 1-855-USAVE, visit distributel.ca, or find Distributel on Facebook to access cool contests. Distributel. Welcome to a world without limits.
Well, you're the grand wine, have you noticed? When you're walking all the fatty boys up at the derbies. Well, my starship doesn't want that, and neither does his wife. I'm glad I got you on my view screen, sailor. You're the grand wine, come and call. My spaceship comes to hold me and hold me like a girl. I am a captain of the gravity, Max. Where everywhere I see your faces. From a starship over Venus to the sun, but it's a climb. You're mystical. When my spacesuit comes to hold me, just hold me like a girl. I'll be the captain of the gravity, Max. Where I see your faces in the strangest places. From a starship over Venus to the sun. To the sun.
Okay, so we're back here on 101.9 FM, the morning after show. We were listening there to the Velvet Goldmine soundtrack. It's a film by Todd Haynes. A pretty cool film. It's like a fictional film of the grunge kind of garage glam rock. So that's interesting. So we heard there to Shudder to Think with Hot One and Placebo with 20th Century Boy. That's a cover of... T-Rex, Mark Bolan and T-Rex. So yeah, so we're here with Pamela and Paco. Where are you from, Paco?
I'm from New York, born in New York, but Spanish ancestry.
Oh,
Spanish,
yeah?
Grandfather, yeah.
Okay.
From because of the Civil War in Spain, my grandfather didn't go back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Pamela.
I'm from the Appalachian Mountains of Pennsylvania,
okay,
in the United States, coal mining country.
Okay. Cool.
And like everybody in the United States, except for the Native Americans, you know, we're all immigrants. My forebears came from Ireland.
Okay, yeah, same as here.
Same as here.
Same as here in Canada.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we were talking about the memory, how important is the memory for these people, no, that lived through that, and how important is, or what do you think is important for the kids and the youth to know about what happened in Guatemala, and not only Guatemala, El Salvador, Nicaragua, you know, Argentina.
I think in Guatemala the memory is particularly absent, because if you think about it, the sole genocide in the Americas in the 20th century happened in Guatemala, and the majority of Guatemalans now are under 30 years old, and they're not taught about the genocide in school. So they've come in completely cut off from the memory of what's happened. When we were in Guatemala shooting Granito, we were asked to come and show When the Mountains Tremble in several different places. And when we showed it, the young people in the audience were amazed because they knew a part of the story, but they didn't know the whole story. They knew the part of the story that had affected their family, but not the whole story. And they wanted to stay for 2, 3, 4 hours afterwards to talk. And so because of that, they really inspired us to come up with a sister digital project called Granito, Every Memory Matters. And this is going to be a collection, a database, a bank of memories that the younger generation, who didn't live through the internal conflict, will ask the older generation about their experiences and upload these memories into a public archive to try to keep the memory of what happened in Guatemala alive, known, and public, and also activate the next generation who really do want to know about their own history. And on our Facebook page, Granito Film, it's actually where we're creating the community for people to join these memory teams, especially young people, because everybody's on Facebook. And for people to also weigh in terms of what is your story, what is your memory, what would you like to say about your family's experience, come to the Facebook page. And let's all do it together. Let's all move forward together.
Yeah, it's interesting. I heard have a couple of some Guatemalan friends here, and I've heard their stories too. One of them was the brother of one of them was one of the student leaders in that time, and he was kidnapped. Robin Garcia was his name.
Yes, he's very well known.
Yeah, his brother lives here. His family lives here. He was kidnapped, disappeared, and then he appeared dead like three days later. You know, and there was this public outrage. You know, like thousands of people went to the funeral and. These are the kinds of stories that needs to be retold. I guess especially so it doesn't happen again. Right?
So it doesn't happen again. And also I think we can't really... The Guatemalans always tell me, look, we can't move forward to become a democratic and prosperous and modern country unless we address the crimes of the past. So let's address the crimes of the past and then let's move forward as a country. And that's what all the people in Granito are trying to do, and they found some incredibly creative ways of doing it. And they've never given up on the quest for justice over 3 decades, and I admire them.
Yeah. I guess the other problem, you were in Guatemala, I guess, fairly recently, no?
Yeah, a month ago.
Okay, so there's a lot of violence, no, happening in Guatemala. Do you think it comes also as a second-hand effect, you know, as a collateral damage that all these kids that their parents disappear grew in a violent society? Or what do you think?
I think it's a direct effect. I think that, first of all, after the peace accords in Guatemala in 1996, you have all these military, or even before that, you know, as the military guys demobilized the rank and file, you know, they were sent to commit all these atrocities, and they never faced any punishment. And their commanders hadn't faced any punishment either. So that just leads to this idea that you can commit terrible crimes and get away with it.
Yeah, that's
and because
okay.
they have, you know, and still today, 96% of homicides in Guatemala go unsolved, without justice. But that's what's changing, and that's what Pam was just saying about Guatemalans that want the country to move forward. One really important element that goes with remembering it is also bringing justice, because especially the perpetrators, when they get thrown in jail, they won't forget what they did. As we saw in most of Latin America over the last 30 years, you know, in the countries where justice was brought, in Argentina and Chile and Uruguay, you know, and Peru, it made a difference. It went from dictatorships to democracies. Even if they're not perfect democracies, no democracy is perfect. So,
yeah.
But, you know, it's better than a military dictatorship.
Yeah, all the way. So now Guatemala is going to have a political process. What do you think is going to happen?
Because you mean in the elections?
Yeah, in the elections. It seems like the... Iron fist guy is leading The Poles, no?
Yes, well, Otto Perez Molina is the next probable president of Guatemala. And he was a general in the 1980s. He headed up the Nevaj garrison in the Ixil region, which is one of the hardest hit regions in the Quiché in Guatemala. So it's very, very worrying that he would assume the presidency, I think. There are a lot of people looking for evidence to be used against him. He says he did nothing wrong. He was following orders. But that is very unlikely.
Yeah, and it's very ironic because he's running on a mano dura law and order platform.
Uh-huh.
You know, iron fist, as you say. And that breakdown of law and order goes directly back to what he and his military colleagues did back in the 1980s. So in a strange way, he's now coming to say he's going to bring order to something that he helped to create.
Yeah.
So it's really it's going to be kind of a reckoning for Guatemala, I think, when he becomes president, because people are waiting to see what he's really planning to do with this iron fist approach. And the people that are in the film Granito, How to Nail a Dictator, they're kind of waiting to see, because they don't know if he's going to come out after them, or if he's going to try to, you know, find a work with people and try to go forward.
One of the things you see in Granito is Rigoberta Menchú in the present trying to build a political movement, a Maya-based political movement that would be more equitable and more inclusive, and really have the Maya majority in Guatemala say, hey, we're the majority. Let's stop acting like the minority. So even though she was also a presidential candidate, she didn't make it into the second round. But she's really working hard to strengthen this movement and to get all of the other candidates for Congress and for local seats to win in the WENOC political movement,
mm-hmm.
so that at least they can be some kind of bulwark against what may be coming with Otto Perez Molina.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Let's remind people about the show. Tomorrow, Wednesday 5th at 3:20 p.m. on Granville Cinemas. These guys are going to be there answering questions. And yeah, it's like you said, maybe it's a very emotive film. And it should be, I guess it's emotive every time that you have to answer all the questions. And no.
Yeah,
it's always, it's really moving.
Emotional.
When the film brings out, because film creates a collective space, right? When you see it in a theater, that it makes people actually feel more comfortable expressing themselves, saying things that they probably never talk about usually, or asking questions that maybe hadn't occurred to them until they saw the film. Or just on Sunday night when we had the first screening here in Vancouver, which, by the way, was the Canadian premiere of the film, a man got up and said, you know, I had a friend you know, who was a labor leader, you know, a union leader, and so was I, you know, and a couple other guys who were in the theater with him. He said, we managed to get away with our lives, but our friend didn't, and so we really feel what we just saw in this film, because one of the stories involves a disappeared labor leader. So.
One of the things I think surprises people in all the films that we make is that I always try to use the power of cinema to tell a compelling story. So that means, you know, a beautiful cinematography, very lush music score, things that actually transport you in time and space into other people's lives and take you on a journey that you otherwise might not have gone on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really important when you're telling very difficult stories to make sure that we remember the beauty of humanity, and to photograph it as such, and to present it as such.
Well put.
Cool. No, it's a really beautiful film, too. It's very colorful, and a lot of memories.
It's really also, like, many people have said this, it's like a crime thriller. It's kind of a CSI on a grand scale, you know, that involves a whole country.
Yeah.
But it's really a political crime thriller, and you're kind of on the edge of your seat the whole time you're watching it.
Yeah, exactly. So, so to come tomorrow to the Granville Theater tomorrow 3:20. And if you miss that, there's another show on Thursday, October 13 at 11:45 a.m. at Pacific Cinema.
10:45, I think. Is it?
10:45 a.m. Yeah.
And if you miss that, go to Granito Film on the Facebook page and like us.
Okay, yeah, on the Facebook.
Like us anyway.
Yeah. And any plans for commercial distribution? You're doing the festival rounds right now, I guess, no?
We do the festival rounds. We have, there'll be a broadcast next summer on PBS, on the POV series, which I think reaches here.
We also had a theatrical release in New York, and just last Friday night in Los Angeles, and now we're preparing the national rollout for the film in the United States. But we really want to come to Canada, too. And it's great being at the Vancouver Film Festival, because we're meeting a lot of people here that can help make that possible.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And also, we've been, we're putting up for Oscar consideration. So, you know, we're on sort of that track as well, because we would really love to take the message of Granito to 40 million viewers, you know, if we can get up on that podium.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Cool. Well, let's listen to a couple of songs, and then we'll be right back here to say goodbye to our audience. And we should probably announce some concerts and recommend some films. So, be right back.
How much do you know about bikes? Everything? Perfect. Nothing at all? Even better. At the UBC Bike Kitchen, you can use our space and tools to do your own bike maintenance, get one-on-one instruction on how to fix your bike yourself, or drop your bike off for us to repair. You can also buy a fully refurbished, guaranteed used bicycle, or a variety of new and used parts and accessories. The Bike Kitchen is UBC's non-profit, student-owned, full-service bike shop. We're located in the basement of the Student Union building. Just look for the stairwell on the north side of the sub across from Gage Towers, or search for the UBC Bike Kitchen on Facebook. Stop by the Bike Kitchen, and then get riding.
Oh!
Yeah, so that was another song from Velvet Goldmine, that film. That's Wild Rats making a cover of The Stooges, TBI. Actually, Wild Rats is Mark Arm, the singer of Mudhoney, Ron Ashton, Don Fleming, Thurston Moore from, and Steve Shelley from Sonic Youth. So it's kind of like a nice collaboration between a lot of musicians to do this fictional band. So yeah, we have Paco and Pamela. Thanks, guys, for coming to the radio show and bringing your awesome work here to show to Vancouver.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's been great.
They're going to be available for answers if you have any additional questions tomorrow at the screening. 3:20, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, 3:20.
3:20 at the Granville.
The Granville.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's their first time in Vancouver, so come and treat them well.
But don't be afraid to ask tough questions.
Yeah, exactly. Next show, we're going to have the Sean Aranda, the director of Andrew Birth, Fever Year, which I saw too. It's a really cool film about this guy that is on tour with a fever and the whole year. And we're also going to have Judy Chaikin, director of The Girls in the Band, which is what CITR is sponsoring this year. It's a really cool film. Talks about some of the first female jazz musicians, bebop, until now.
Nice.
So it's kind of like tells the story of the struggle of the girls to be musicians.
Yeah. You know? Huh.
So it goes from the segregation times until now, and how they've been evolved and the influence. And yeah, it's really cool. We'll have her next Tuesday. And so let's recommend some films. That one, it's going to be, actually their first screening is next Tuesday at 6:40 p.m. You were recommending one film.
I would recommend Give Up Tomorrow. The producer is a local Vancouver guy.
Okay.
Marty Sajuco.
That's been a film that has been getting a lot of attention on the festival circuit. And really, people should see it.
Yeah, what is it about?
Pam?
It's about the arrest of a Philippine Spanish national named Paco.
Okay.
And the efforts of his families and friends to release him. It's one of the it won the Audience Award at the Tribeca Film Festival, and audiences love this film because they feel that they can participate in justice.
Okay. Cool. Also, bandmusic.ca is sponsoring The Ballad of Genesis and Lady J, which is the story of Genesis P. Orridge from Throbbing Gristle and his love story with Lady J. Super interesting film. The first screening is on Thursday at 4:20, convenient time, September 29, The Granville. So check that film. It's really cool. It's really mind-blowing. And as of fiction films, I saw Sandman, a Swiss film. Really funny.
Liked it?
Really funny film.
Really?
Yeah. The Sandman. What else I've seen that I really like? Oh, there's Tatsumi, which is a Japanese animation film. Also, I recommend that. The new Almodóvar film is cool. The Skin I Live In.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another Spanish film called Amador, which is also very interesting. Another fiction there.
I think Las Acacias is playing here, right?
Yeah, Las Acacias.
I've heard good things about that film. Yeah. I haven't seen it myself, but I'm planning to see it soon.
Yeah, it's slow film, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very naturalist film, I guess.